Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the US? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. I love Fast Growing Trees because Drew and I love gardening and stuff like that, but we always forget to run our little errands on the weekend where we go to the nurseries and say, I'd like that tree over there, please. But instead, I can just sit my booty on the couch, type in fastgrowingtrees.com, and get whatever plant I want. I just recently ordered a lemon tree because, mama, when life gives you lemons, you can make lemonade and lots of delicious lemon-flavored desserts, which I'm excited about. And it's going to get to my door in 1 to 2 days, and then I'll have so many lemons. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code MORBID at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code MORBID at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code MORBID. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Hey, weirdos, I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And this is MORBID.
This is MORBID.
That felt like the old times when I would say it.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was.
Just a little more simplistic than
it's
I usually
just, yeah,
do.
Yeah, it's just something about today.
Yeah. Well, it's nighttime and we don't usually record at night.
We don't. It's something spooky, something nostalgic about it.
Yeah. It's like the first time that we like recorded.
And you know what? Speaking of nostalgia,
what?
I just had to say, in case, I just wanted to let everybody know that there's a few episodes in our back catalog that I'm like, you know, we always talk about how we were like underwater and our sound quality was terrible.
Yeah.
You all know, you all loved it. I'm not going to, don't worry, because people, I remember I mentioned it once and people were like, don't like take out any of the old episodes or like redo them because they like show your growth.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Like, I love that.
Yeah,
I love that
sweet.
People said that. That's really cool. And I'm not going to like remove all these episodes or anything, but we are going to be like trying to remaster a few of them and make them sound a little better just so new people who come to the podcast aren't hearing that as
just
their
so
first
new
gateway.
Because not to stay.
Yeah, not everybody is as forgiving, you know? Like, so we just want to like try to make it better. And there's a couple that like I was listening to them, and not only is the sound quality bad, but like I was like, you know, I feel like I've read more about that case now, and like I didn't include these details that I wish I did.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? And it's just like, it's, I just want to do it better. So if you see things getting moved around in our back catalog or like, you know, updated at all, don't be like, oh my God, where did that episode go? It's coming back. It's yeah. just, we're going to be like,
it's being tweaked.
Yeah. We're going to be tweaking some episodes here and there, and we'll let you know.
Like, because guess what? You didn't need to know about my vanilla chai at the salon.
You did.
I almost just said that's, the exact
yeah,
salon.
Yeah. Like there's a few episodes where I was listening back to them and I was like, yeah, we went on like too far of a tangent sometimes. I think it's just like for our own, like, it just doesn't represent what we want it to represent all the time. So yeah. I just want to let you guys know, just in case you were like, where did that episode go? Or why is that episode suddenly slightly different?
Excuse me, ma'am.
But don't worry. When we update episodes or, you know, remaster them, redo them, we're going to let you know. So on like the whatever episode I do it the next week, I'll be like, hey, by the way, guys, go check out that episode because we redid it.
Yeah.
So you won't be in the dark. You'll know.
Love that.
But I just want to let you know. So you know, we're all in this together.
We are.
So I wanted you to know what's going on behind the scenes. Well, just trying to make it a little more palatable for everybody in the back catalog there.
Yeah. Well, and because we're all in this together, let's talk about the fact that some of you are like, why the fuck did you refund my show? Like,
why did you just give me money?
What's happening? So basically what we're doing right now is that almost every single venue and like show that we had, we're still going to do them. But yes. Right now, we are refunding you because we have no idea when it's going to be acceptable to gather in large crowds.
Yeah, and these places don't want to hold your money hostage while we try to figure out what dates are happening, you know, like when it's going to happen.
Yeah, and you know what? Maybe we'll do different venues in those same places, but find like, oh, maybe like a fun cemetery.
Yeah, we're going to make it a little like,
or like a
we're
dark
be creative
cave.
About yeah. it. So if we were coming to your city and
we
you had tickets,
are.
Please don't worry. Like, we're not coming. Like, sorry.
Bye.
That would have been fun. Bye. No, we're going to. We don't want those venues like hanging on to your money while we try to figure out what dates this is going to happen to, because that's not really fair.
No.
And also, we, like Ash said, we're trying to like change up the venue a little in the same cities.
We want it to be a little more of like an experience.
Yes. We have ideas. We've had a lot of time with COVID to like really talk about it and like really conceptualize some fun things.
The amount of Pinterest boards that I have right now. And then the only one that you're not going to get refunded. No. The only one where you're not going to see a refund is Boston, because we still plan to do that show.
Yeah, the Wilbur is happening.
Not on that date, most likely.
Yes, not this month.
In fact, when I say happening. Most likely, I mean at all.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, that's going to be rescheduled.
So that will be rescheduled. So just hang on to that, because we will update you as soon as we know. The Wilbur's just like a little up in the air right now when this can all happen.
And we don't want like 1,200 of you to like gather and have us be the reason.
That's our thing. It's just, we really don't want to like encourage people to gather too soon.
No, it seems a little hypocritical.
We're getting to a place of like,
we're
okay.
almost there.
Like, we're getting to a place of vaccine and a place of herd immunity.
Yeah.
And we want to just let that ride out for a little while so that everybody can feel safe.
Yes.
Everybody can feel comfortable.
So that I don't have to hear a single one of you sneeze during my fucking set.
That's it. That's all it is. Ash doesn't want to hear a sneeze or a cough during it. No.
No, I'm totally kidding.
It's because we care about you and, you know, we care about
ourselves.
I don't want to
get you sick.
And we don't care about
your babies.
We don't want anybody getting sick. So, and we don't want to encourage it before it's okay. So we can't wait. Like, trust me.
Oh, I am craving it.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
But again, we just want to be responsible. We want to be fair to everybody. So if you see those refunds coming in,
that's
what that is. And look out, because we'll let you know as soon as we're coming back.
Oh my God. That just scared the shit out of
me. Oh, it's a ladybug.
So it's on, like, we have these little, like, sound things so that we're not echoey, and it's in front of me. And all of a sudden, I just see this creepy crawly going up the side. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
And it's a ladybug.
It was just a ladybug.
Yeah, it's just a lovely little ladybug.
Hi, girl.
Hi, girl.
So
I think that was all the business, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, even if there's more, like, too much time, bye. So let's get into it. I had mentioned last week that, you know, we weren't going to do Venus Extravaganza right quite now because not the right time. And then, so what I did was I went back on the Patreon, because it was, the Venus Extravaganza was a Patreon pick, and I still wanted the Patreon to feel like they got their full month's picks.
For sure. So I went on the original post where everybody was like picking their things, and I was like, what cases were like super, super requested? And the two that were the most requested were the Molly Bish story and Dominique Dunn. So what I'm going to do is the popular vote, I hate to even say that, was Molly Bish. And so I'm going to do that today. And then next week, I'm going to do the Dominique Dunn story.
Woo!
So without further ado, Molly Ann Bish was born on August 2nd, 1983. Her parents are John Sr. and Maggie Bish.
Adorable names.
And Maggie is Maggie with an I. Oh. Her full name is Magdalene, I believe.
Oh, I love that.
Or Magdalena. Maggie for most of this. So yeah, she had two older siblings, Heather and John Jr. And the family was originally from Detroit, but Maggie and John decided that it just wasn't the best place for them to raise their young kids. And actually, something that made a huge impact on their decision to move was the abduction of a young girl who lived close by.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. So they moved to a quiet Massachusetts town called Warren. Have you ever been there?
Ever heard of it? Yeah, I have been to Warren.
It is literally like... it's like a different world. It's like so Oklahoma,
quaint.
I feel.
Yeah, it's so quaint.
Yeah, it's very quaint. It's like beautiful.
Yeah.
So John Sr. actually worked as a police officer, and Maggie was able to stay at home with the kids until her youngest, Molly, started kindergarten. And Maggie said that there were two sides to Molly. She could be like really shy, or she could be super funny. And she compared her humor to like Lucy from I Love Lucy.
Oh, I love that.
She was like, that was Molly's kind of funny.
She's Lucille Ball. That's a great icon to be compared to humor-wise.
Yeah, huge compliment.
So good for her.
She sounded like she must have been hilarious.
Yeah, hot shit.
Now, Molly was the kind of girl to include everybody. Her mom said that she never wanted anyone left out and that people were just naturally drawn to Molly. She had one of those like... faces, personalities, energies that people wanted to be around her.
She did have one of those faces. Because every time you see a picture of her, you're like, oh.
She's like drop dead. Like she was beautiful.
And you just want to know her.
Yeah, she just, like, you know how like you can tell somebody's a nice person?
Yeah.
Like there's no way you're
it
mean.
It just radiates.
Yeah, I don't have that face. So Molly was not only a kind, funny kid. She was also a talented athlete. She played softball, soccer, basketball.
Damn.
And on top of all of that, she was also an honor student.
Wow.
And she was an honor student that hoped to someday work with children. That was like what she wanted to do.
Stop.
So she was outgoing. She was popular among her friends in high school. She had a boyfriend that she had recently gone to prom with. And this was summer now. And everybody was going to be heading into their senior year that fall.
Mm-hmm.
So in the meantime, that summer, Molly wanted to work as a lifeguard at a nearby pond. And her brother, John, had actually worked as a lifeguard at Cummins Pond too, and he was the one who got her set up for working.
Yeah.
I think he had worked there for like the 3 years before she started working
there.
Oh,
wow.
So it was almost like, not like a family gig, but like her brother like passed down his job.
Yeah.
So he showed her how to set up for the day. He laughed, remembering like teaching her how to look for snakes, which I thought was adorable.
And he showed her terrifying and adorable.
I know, I hate snakes. He showed her just like the ins and outs of the job. So Molly had been working for a week and she was enjoying it. And then on the morning of June 27th, 2000, she got bad news. Her mother, she was like getting ready for work, and her mother had to tell her that one of her friends that she played soccer with was actually in the hospital in critical condition, and she had been hit by a car while she was riding her bike.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like very serious. So Molly was obviously super upset, but it was too late to call into work, and there were going to be swim lessons that day, and she didn't want to miss them. She was like excited about them. So she made like a super responsible decision to go in for her shift.
Wow.
Which at 16 years old, I feel like that was the really like mature decision
to make.
It
really was.
I think that says a lot about her.
Yeah, it would have been much easier to make the other decision.
For sure.
It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
So Maggie drove Molly to the police station to pick up the two-way radio that the lifeguards would use. They would like use it to contact the police if there was an emergency.
Yeah.
And they also stopped to grab a couple of water bottles. When they got to the pond, Molly told her mom she loved her and ran up to her post to set up for the day. So by 10 a.m., the swimmers, who Molly was like looking forward to helping and looking after, they arrived at the pond, but there was no lifeguard on duty. Yeah. So the parents of the swimmers were like, that's weird. And one of the moms took the post herself for the time being because somebody had to do it.
Yeah.
And she saw that there were flip-flops in the sand by the post and that the two-way radio was there. A first aid kit was there and there was a backpack. And actually, the first aid kit was open.
So it's very clear that there was a lifeguard there at one point.
It's very clear that Molly was there
and
had set up for the day. Oof. Like I said, it seemed like somebody had been there to set up and then just vanished.
I hate this case.
This case.
I'm already just like, ugh.
I know. I'm literally wrapped in a blanket right now and I have chills. So Molly's boss was informed that she was nowhere to be found. So he contacted the police when she didn't show up. Which is like, okay. I'm like, why didn't you also call her parents? But
whatever. Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. So the police immediately assumed that Molly had ran off with friends, even though there was nothing about her character that like could have aided in that abrupt decision.
That she would suddenly just abandon her job and run out with friends.
She'd been working for a week. She'd never done that before. Like,
yeah. It didn't come off like she was she's 16, I guess. I don't know if that's just like...
That's literally in my notes.
Of course, she's very responsible and she seems like a more responsible 16-year-old.
But they
like,
don't know her.
She's still a 16-year-old. So they're probably just like...
And that's how they looked at. Literally, I wrote like the stereotype of 16-year-old girls. They were like, she ran off. I think they knew that her friend had been in the hospital. They're like, maybe that's what happened. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. But that wasn't Molly. She wouldn't do that.
No.
So when Molly still hadn't turned up by 1 o'clock p.m. at this point, the police contacted her parents to let them know what was going on. So it's been 3 hours since Maggie's dropped her daughter off, and she has no idea that
they can't find her.
2 minutes after she left, something happened.
And it happened so quick.
Yeah, because the first swimmers arrived like a little bit after 10, like a few minutes after 10. Yeah,
that's the part that really gets me about this. Somebody, is how quickly this happened.
Somebody had, in my opinion, somebody had been watching her for a little while.
Knew the routine,
knew what time she got there. And we'll see later on that there's like a point where like they could have been hiding and like the Maggie wouldn't have seen them and neither would Molly. And
absolutely.
So we'll get horrifying. Into it. Yeah. So they contact her parents to let them know what's going on. But they still believe that she would turn up and had just gone off with her friends. And Maggie and all of her family are like, no. So no. Maggie called Molly's older sister, Heather. Now, Maggie's the mom. Just I think the M's get a little confusing.
Yeah.
Maggie calls Molly's older sister, Heather, to let her know what's going on. And Heather promptly heads over to help her mom search for Molly. They knew something wasn't right about this entire situation. And they were like, if nobody else is going to investigate, then like, fuck it. We will.
Yeah, of course.
So they started contacting Molly's friends. They went to her boyfriend's house. They checked to see if she had visited that friend in the hospital. Nope. She wasn't anywhere that they looked. Nobody had heard from her. Nobody said like they heard that she was going to go here or there or anywhere.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't a case of she just checked out. Now, the police proposed that maybe she had drowned. Which they were like, her family was like, I know. Like, first of all, it's a pond. So,
she's a lifeguard.
She's a lifeguard. Yeah. And they were like,
not that lifeguards can't drown, but it's like,
of course they can. But they were like, no, she's a very strong swimmer. And it's not like there was weather that day or anything where the water, like the pond water would have gotten rough.
When would she have drowned?
Well, that's the problem.
She just arrived at her post.
Yeah. It didn't really make any sense. I think that they just.
You gotta think of anything at this point.
Right. You want an answer. You're not going to immediately be like, she was abducted, which
you're going to hope that's
maybe you
not
should
the case.
Treat it like that. But I'm not a police officer.
I feel like you should just overreact.
Yeah.
Always overreact.
Yeah. You know, but so her brother, John, even got in the water to search for his sister himself. He was diving all around trying to find any sign of Molly. The investigators actually made him come out so that they could bring in their boats and divers.
Aww.
They looked and looked and looked. Molly had not drowned. She was not anywhere in that water. And then Maggie remembered something that would haunt this case for like the next 20 years to come. A white car had been parked in the lot the day earlier, so the previous day.
Okay.
And the man sitting inside had really freaked Maggie out. So much so that she actually didn't leave Molly alone until the car left.
Huh.
Yeah. She said that she saw a man sitting in a white parked car smoking a cigarette, and she saw him staring. And actually, most of the articles that I read said glaring at Molly. what the fuck?
Yeah. And she said there was immediately this horrible feeling in her gut while she stared back at the man like a self-proclaimed mama bear, like trying to mess with my daughter. Like, so he stared right back at her and then finally drove away.
Oh, that would, I'd be way too horrified by that.
But I think she was like, well, John worked here for like 3 years. And like,
I mean, you're not going to think this person is like,
no,
going to come back.
Of course
not. That's not your immediate, like, hindsight right now. I'm like, oh,
right.
But it's like in the moment, you're going to be like, he's gone.
Right. He's gone.
That was weird.
That was
weird.
He's gone. Yeah. And actually the morning that Molly went missing, Maggie was relieved because when they got there, there was a sand delivery truck. So she was like, okay, Molly, she was like, I wasn't going to leave her alone after that had happened that day.
But now I see that there's,
yeah,
there's workers here, there's other people.
And she actually, Molly had arrived a little bit late that day. Like, she, I think she was supposed to be there before 10.
Oh, okay.
So she was like, the swimmers are going to be here any minute.
And yeah.
She's not alone.
Yeah.
And so the day before, she had actually walked Molly to her post and hung out for a while until she was sure that the creepy man had driven off. And she was able to give all the details of the man's features to a sketch artist, and a composite sketch was made showing an older man with a large mustache, dark eyes, and salt and pepper hair holding a cigarette.
Ew.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing it and I'm like, no.
Yeah. So the first one was done and she was like, cool. But they actually had a second sketch artist come in named, I believe it's Gene Boylan. And we'll post that one because that is like the most well-known in the case. Like, if you're Googling it right now.
I was going to say, I know this one.
Yeah, that's the one by, I believe it's Gene.
That's so horrifying.
He's terrifying looking.
Yeah, I hate it.
Yeah. So by this point, the police, the Warren police, are realizing that they have a missing persons case on their hands, and they decide to bring in the state police because Warren's like we said in the beginning, a quaint little quiet town, like nothing like this happens here.
Exactly, and that's the other reason why I'm sure it wasn't the first thing that popped in her head that this guy is going to like come back and do something. It's like this
is a quiet town.
It's a quiet town
where nothing happens.
It doesn't happen a lot here. That is a thing.
Right. But I mean, I was like really happy to see that the Warren police were like, you know what? We don't have expertise in this area. Let's bring in the state police. Because I feel like we have talked about so many cases where they're like, nope, we can handle it.
Where the egos get in the way. It's so nice when, because we've had a few that have done this, which it's like, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because it's like when they let the egos go and they're like, we need some help. We can't handle this.
Right.
Yes.
Like, not to say that there weren't mistakes made during the investigation.
For
there
sure.
Definitely were. But, you know.
But at least they
got to give credit where credit's due, I guess.
Exactly.
So the first night came and went, obviously, without Molly's return. Molly's father, John Bish, said, quote, it's hard for me to describe that sinking, hollow feeling you have as divers are looking for your daughter, as dogs are combing through the woods, and police officers are searching and interviewing people. And I almost immediately began to think that something really horrible had happened.
I never ever can put myself in that state of mind.
No.
I can't. And anytime I hear it, I'm like, I just want to like hug these people.
I know. Well, this like makes me actually want to hug you, and we're not even huggers, because I like almost started crying when I read this.
Oh God.
Molly's sister Heather remembered how surreal that first night was. And she said that she kept going outside, just like thinking maybe and hoping that her sister's kidnapper was just going to like drop her off.
Ugh.
Because you think, like, it's like when you've done something and you're like, crap, why did I do that? Can I rewind? Like, you know that feeling?
Yes.
But in like, this case, she's like, maybe this will happen. Like,
maybe
in a perfect world.
Maybe it'll just happen.
Right. Ugh. And Heather and her sister had started to become, like, because Heather was a little bit older. And so they were starting to get closer because now Molly was getting older. And they were kind of, Heather said, like, establishing a more, like, adult sister relationship.
Yeah. It's always fun when that happens, actually, because that happened with, like, you know, with us.
Yeah.
And then it also happened with, like, me and my brother, like, 8 years apart.
Yeah.
And when we got to that, like, point where you're, like, suddenly at this good place where,
right,
like, you get each other's humor now and you're, like, cool and, like, you can hang out.
Because the older person is like, oh, you're, like, a real person
now. I can chill with you now. Like, I'm not just making fun of you all the time. Like, I can actually hang out with you.
Yeah. Like, you're
I remember,
like, a little tag along.
Yeah. Like, I remember that point with JP and I was like, oh.
I know, that is the best.
Yeah,
I remember that point, like, even with my little sister.
Yeah it happens in every sibling relationship.
It does. So the next day there was a massive search. There were helicopters, search dogs, tons of people heading out promptly at 6 a.m to find Molly. Businesses printed out missing persons flyers. Neighbors joined in on the search. People tied yellow ribbons throughout the neighborhood.
I remember that.
And oh my God, this broke my heart. I saw an interview with Maggie, or it might have been a quote, where she said, like, the yellow ribbons floating throughout the air, like,
later on they discover some remains. Ugh. And she was like, it was almost like Molly's hair, like flowing in the wind.
Oh yeah.
And she was like, it was like she was there before we knew that she wasn't there.
Oh, that just gave me like full chills.
It gave me, I don't know why it reminded me of the Lovely Bones, but it did.
No, it does.
Yeah.
100% it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing like the families grieving.
Oh, yeah.
This case really,
because I remember when this was all going on, the family, you were just like, your heart shattered
and for them. We're from Massachusetts. So there's that other like,
it's always
you're that. My like, you're my family almost.
Yeah, you're my Massachusetts family. Yeah. So it's like, I feel like, I feel so empathetic.
This family actually reminds me so much of our family, just like based on like things that I've seen. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. It's just, oh.
It's horrible. So yeah, but. Nothing turned up. So the scene back at the beach was essentially demolished because, number one, nobody thought that, like, it took too long to become a crime scene in the first place because they were like, oh, she ran away. And even before anybody knew anything, there's already, like, swimmers that are coming for the day. And
the day is beginning.
The mom set up at the lifeguard post because she didn't know what was going on.
Of course not.
So, you know, it was just demolished. So they tried to get what they could get. But the other thing is,
so compromised.
It's a freaking beach. There's sand everywhere. Like, what are you going to get, really?
Oh, yeah. Outdoor crime scenes, forget about it anyways. It's always harder. But then you add, like, next to the water.
Right.
With, you know, you're next to the water. It's windier.
Right.
There's moisture around. Like, it's just takes.
It's a nightmare. Yeah. But something that really bothered the investigators working of, like, what they had of a scene was that the first aid kit was open, like I said.
Yeah.
Why was it open? Like, it was just some, like, a little detail that will become much bigger.
Yeah, when you said it, at first I was like, that's strange.
It's just a little weird.
Yeah.
Well, and what they wondered was maybe somebody approached Molly and gained her trust by, like, leading her to believe that they were injured in some way. Like,
a Ted Bundy.
Oh, you have a Band-Aid or do you have this? And got her to, like, grab something, hop down from her post and help them, and then they probably just scooped her up. And
that seems so likely.
It absolutely does,
because it's like a Ted Bundy thing. They prey on somebody who will help them,
right? And I mean, she's a lifeguard, like,
and she's like
and she's like, that's my job. Yeah. And she's a sweet girl, so
yeah, she's a kind person. Of course she's gonna help. Right. She has a first aid kit,
right?
And it's a perfect way, because I always thought that too, was like the lifeguard post, you're like, oh well, you're high in the air, that's like a good place to be, I guess, if you're being attacked, because it's like they have to get you down,
right?
But to get her down, that's a perfect way to do it.
Exactly, because
they knew it's much harder to get them down,
right?
So that's,
they preyed
that makes
on
it even worse.
They preyed on her kindness.
Yeah.
Now, right off the bat, so they're thinking that's weird, but obviously they have to clear the people that they know exist.
Of course.
So her boss and her boyfriend were the first people looked into as, like, people of interest, but they both had either alibis or passed their polygraph test.
Yeah.
So they were quickly like, no, it wasn't them. Now, with the news of the lurking man in the car, there was a roadblock set up and a tip line established. So people were obviously calling in to say all kinds of things. Obviously, we have, like, the people that just want to call because they're bored on a Tuesday.
Which
and
is
they're like,
horrible.
I saw Molly in, like, Wisconsin, or I saw her here. Like, they were just saying, like, all parts of the country.
I hate that people do that.
Acting like she was a runaway. It's like,
don't.
Get a life.
Just don't do it.
Get a hobby.
Seriously, like.
A different hobby.
Like, can you, for one second, but, like, understand that this girl has a family?
Right.
Like, you're destroying every time you do that. Like,
and here's the deal. She could have still been alive while you're calling in that tip that she's halfway across the country or something like that. And then they're looking into that, and that's precious time wasted.
Exactly.
Where they could have potentially rescued her.
Exactly.
We don't know what happened.
That's the thing. It always derails the investigation because it sends it sometimes on a wild goose chase.
Right.
And it's like, and while they're looking into this, some shit is going down over here.
Exactly.
Ugh, it's just so aggravating.
I just don't understand, like, what you gain from that.
I don't get people's mentality that do that shit.
No, it's
like, I really don't. That's some shady shit.
And I just can't imagine, like, sorting through the tips and being like, being the one to determine what we're going to go after and what we're not.
Yeah.
That's like a really hard job.
That's,
I would assume.
The thing. Yeah.
So yeah, some people are saying she's halfway across the country, but other people reported that they had seen that white car at the cemetery a few days prior with a man in it who looked similar to the sketch.
Hmm.
And then some people say that he was near the pond just a couple minutes before Maggie and Molly arrived.
Ooh.
Yeah. And there was actually a trail on the beach leading to that cemetery. I think it was like one article I read said it was like a fork in the beach, and like,
oh, okay.
One side of it led to that cemetery.
Our
Are you the kind of person who loves a touch-up on the go, or maybe you're a full glam while in the carpool kind of human? Maybe there's no time for a full face in the morning between kids, pets, work, all of that. Maybe you woke up late. Well, Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation is perfect for those moments when life moves fast. I absolutely love this foundation because it doesn't settle into any fine lines or wrinkles, and you can just toss this thing in your purse. You say, oh my gosh, I have a little smudge right here. Let me fix it really quick. It's perfect. And it's now in 16 shades. It offers SPF 20, which, like, that's amazing. It's got moisturizing pro vitamin B5. And I love the applicator. It's a blurring sponge. So you can just tap, tap, tap it to reset your foundation and you are good. Shop Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
And the sketch is like very, like, you would know.
Yeah.
You would know that guy.
He has a very, he honestly looks like Matilda's dad.
He kind of does.
Like a little bit.
Like Danny DeVito.
Like Danny DeVito, I love your work.
He has a
very distinct mustache. He has very distinct eyes.
It's very distinct. The eyes really
are like,
the thing that are like,
even like the forehead wrinkles and the way his hair is parted. Like
very specific nose shape.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw him, you'd be like, yeah, that is him.
Yeah, like I definitely saw that guy.
It's not just a guy with a mustache. It's a very specific guy.
It is. And we'll post it.
Yeah.
And then that trail, actually, police ended up investigating it, but they came up with nothing.
Oh, really?
There's nothing there.
Again, it's outside, so it's so hard.
Well, that's the thing. Exactly.
It's so easy to lose evidence outside.
I
mean,
the only thing that I guess that they could have gotten was like tire tracks, but maybe there just weren't any.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and who's to say that he was in the cemetery? That's, again, just a tip.
Sorry, I just throwing things.
I was going to say, I just slammed into my microphone. I'm sorry.
We talk with our hands.
I do. So, things were being investigated. Nothing's turning up. They are sex offenders in the area were interviewed. They were polygraphed. Actually, a few of them did not pass their polygraph tests.
Huh?
But there wasn't really, there was like a couple people that didn't, and there was nothing to hold them on really.
Hmm.
And no, I mean, they don't have a shred of evidence. So what are they going to do?
Yeah. What are you going to do?
You can't do much with just a polygraph.
Yeah. You can't be like, I think you lied.
Yeah. And also it's weird that like multiple of them lied. Like,
yeah.
Strange.
I think maybe it's just like nerves.
Yeah, that could happen. Yeah. I feel like I could never pass one of those. I think I would just be like, ugh.
Yeah. And if you're coming in as a sex offender already, you're probably already
pretty nervous.
Nervous,
which you should be. Don't sex offend.
Don't do it.
So the next big tip would not come until May of 2003, 3 years after Molly Bish went missing.
Wow.
Yeah. A hunter from the area had seen a blue bathing suit in the woods in a nearby town called Palmer, which I've actually literally never heard of.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of it.
Oh, yeah. All right. It's Massachusetts. when police went to investigate, they did find a piece from what they determined to be Molly's bathing suit. Not only did her father remember buying that bathing suit with his daughter, it was like this very specific blue and white color, they said. Like, he was like, I know that was it. But DNA testing confirmed that it was Molly's.
Oh, that's horrific.
Now, once the bathing suit was found, there was another massive search. And actually, it was the biggest search in Massachusetts state history.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This was everywhere.
Absolutely.
Everywhere. I was in high school when this happened. It was everywhere.
Yeah. I don't remember it because I think I was literally 5 years old. I was pretty young.
You were really, I mean, in 2003, you were what, like 8 years old?
Yeah, I was like, in 2004, I was eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
You were young.
But I don't remember this at all because I was so little. And I think probably if it was on the news, somebody was like, let's not have
let's just turn that off.
This five-year-old is in here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the huge, huge, huge search, massive search, biggest in U.S., in Massachusetts history. And then the first week of June, there were multiple grim discoveries.
Ugh.
Partial remains were found in Palmer in an area called Whiskey Hill. A lock of hair and a tongue ring were also found, all confirmed to be Molly's.
Ugh.
Yeah. And I just thought this was like a really cute story because like I think she's so badass for like convincing her parents to get a tongue ring.
I know. I was going to say, what a badass.
Right. And John Sr. remembered taking Molly to get her tongue pierced the previous spring. And he was like, the only reason that I did it is that she promised she, quote, wouldn't get any tattoos or any other piercings until she was 45 at least. And I just thought that was like a cute like story.
Well, and she seems like she was such a like a good kid.
Yeah.
And like pretty responsible.
They were like
wasn't rebellious.
What you want to do, cool.
And if if your kid is that good and they're like, can I just get my tongue pierced? Like, it's not permanent.
No.
So, you know what I mean? Like, it's
and especially
like,
in 2000s. Like, yeah. That, I remember even in, like, when I was in high school, people are still getting their tongues pierced.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, in, I feel like back then it was, like, such a thing.
Oh, it was a huge thing then.
Yeah. So, he, I thought that was just, like, a cute yeah. story, like, father-daughter story.
Yeah, they just seemed like they were, like...
And honestly,
the bond between them was something like really special, and it's sad.
Yeah, her parents just seem so cool. Like yeah. they seem like really just like down to earth, sweet people. Her yeah. mom, and like I said in the beginning, her mom was saying how Molly had like an I Love Lucy sense of humor, and her mom in interviews she has like this smile, and obviously it's like she's smiling through a lot of pain, mm-hmm. but you can tell that she's like kind of goofy and silly too.
Yeah, like she just gives that vibe off.
They just seem like really fucking awesome people.
Yeah, it really sucks when this shit happens, because it's always to these kind of people.
Exactly. You know, I hate it so much. Now, only 26 of the 206 bones that make up the human body mm-hmm. were found.
Wow.
26.
Wow.
Maggie and John actually had to wait to collect their daughter's remains and wait to hold a funeral service so that everything could be analyzed, and then they were advised against cremating Molly's remains in case like any new testing or anything yeah. like that came about.
Yeah, I can understand that.
So Molly's remains were buried along with her prom dress and a ton Ugh. Of letters from written by friends and family.
Wow. That's and like with the prom dress, it's like, ooh, because you forget.
She literally just went to prom.
She was fucking 16.
Like, what?
Ugh.
And this is really just going to drive the point home, like how horrific this case was and how much this poor family suffered. Molly was buried on what would have been her 20th birthday.
Wow.
August 2nd, 2003. Wow. Like, it's just horrific.
Ugh.
So let's get into like, who the heck did this now?
Who the fuck did this?
Right? We're going to get into suspects, and I'm like reluctant to even say suspects because so far in the past 20 years that this case has been ongoing and open and everything, no arrests have ever been made.
Which is crazy.
Nuts. It's been, 21 years now.
I know, and it feels like 2003. You're like, oh yeah, that was a few years ago.
Yeah, in 2000 like, nope. when she disappeared.
Yeah.
But there have been a lot of different persons of interest along the way. Now, the first person was named in February of 2008. This is a man named Rodney Stegner, I believe is how you say it. He was arrested in Florida for the murder of his girlfriend, Crystal Morrison. He stabbed her 39 times and nearly decapitated her.
Jesus.
So that just goes to show you what kind of guy yeah. we're dealing with. Crystal's sister Bonnie actually came forward to give information that she thought might be helpful in the Molly Bish investigation.
Wow.
Now, she said that she and her sister hadn't spoken for like almost 20 years. And then out of the blue, Bonnie got a call from Crystal. And Crystal told Bonnie that she was sure that she was going to be murdered by her boyfriend Rodney that night. And first of all, the conversation starts off like that. And then the rest of the conversation is just like very bizarre. It was almost like Crystal was speaking to Bonnie in some kind of like code.
Wow. And you don't talk to her for 20 years. And that's the first time she calls, she's like, I'm fairly certain I'm going to be murdered tonight.
Yeah. I mean,
like, what the fuck?
Right. So Crystal also told her sister that she needed the phone numbers for the FBI and the Massachusetts State Police. Now, remember, they're living in Florida. And she was like, I don't need Florida police. I need Massachusetts State Police.
What?
And she wanted both parties to come and talk to her and Rodney about murders.
Oh, that's weird.
Yep. Now it's gonna get weirder because Crystal actually commented a couple times and seemed to be making a point about asking Bonnie about her bird. Like, I guess Bonnie had this bird that was like squawking in the background. Mm-hmm. And Crystal like kept commenting on it. There was multiple phone calls, and she's like, one day Bonnie told her the bird's name because she asked, and she was like, oh, okay. And then the next night she asked the bird's name again, and she's like, how did she already, like the article I read, she was like, how did she already forget? We just talked about this.
Yeah.
And Bonnie reminded Crystal that that bird's name was Molly. And then the phone went silent, and Bonnie realized that there was a reason why Crystal was making a point to mention the bird.
What?
And I guess she was like, it's Molly. And then there was silence, and then Bonnie was like, oh my God. And Crystal is like, yep, like.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Did Rodney look like the sketch?
Oh, okay. We'll get into that.
Oh my God, I'm stressed.
Now, Rodney, believe it or not, so remember, they're in Florida.
But believe it or not, he had actually lived in Southbridge, Massachusetts, which is only about 15 miles away from Warren, which would be like a 25-minute drive.
Yeah,
I googled it. Nothing.
It's crazy that I don't remember hearing about this.
Really?
This is nuts.
Really?
This is like actually new to me.
So this is in 2008.
Wow.
I think there was just like probably so there much about so this many. Case.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was an experienced hunter and fisherman with a known background of violence against women, obviously. And that was exactly who the authorities were looking at that time. They said it's probably somebody just like that between the ages of 18 and 50.
Yeah.
We can't narrow like the ages down more than that, but they're a hunter, they're a fisherman, they know the area.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely violent. Now, Rodney was, quote, familiar with Commons Pond and Whiskey Hill. And if that's not enough for you, this guy lived, quote, 0.3 mile away from the YMCA in Southbridge, where Molly got her lifeguard certification.
Shut the front door.
Molly's dad worked part-time at a hospital in Southbridge, so he would bring Molly to her classes and pick her up when they were done. But there were some days where she got out early or like he had to stay late, so she would hang out around the area. And there was a local coffee shop that she would usually hang out at until like her dad would come get her. Now, one of the private investigators who worked for the Bish family, his name is Tom Shamsack, I believe is how you say it. He said, quote, it's very significant because it's a possible explanation of where Rodney Stegner may have first encountered Molly Bish. This is not a heavily populated area. It's quite possible that the two of them met there. She may have been chatted up. He may have extradited information from her, namely that she was going to be employed at Commons Pond.
There's so many pieces that fit here.
Oh, absolutely. So, and Tom felt that way too, the private investigator. So he actually went to visit Rodney in prison because remember, he's in prison for literally murdering his girlfriend. He went to go speak with him and he showed Rodney a picture of Molly. And he said that Rodney wouldn't even look at the picture, like glanced at it and pushed it back across the table, like didn't want to look at it.
I feel like Rodney did it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like shocked right now.
So you're going to be even more shocked. Now, going back to Crystal's sister, Bonnie, she was the one who had to go into the home where her sister was murdered to gather all of her sister's belongings.
Ugh.
And it took a little while. I think Bonnie was experiencing like some health issues. But so it took a little while. But when she got there, she found Rodney's wallet with a copy of his firearms license. And she said, quote, when I first saw the FID, I said to myself, oh, my God, this guy could have sat there and posed for that sketch.
What?
In 2015, HBO's The Jinx unraveled one of the most notorious unsolved crimes in New York's history, exposing long-buried information discovered during the filmmaker's decades-long investigation of Robert Durst, scion of New York's billionaire real estate family. Now, The Jinx is back for part two, where the filmmakers continued investigating for 8 years, uncovering hidden material, Durst's prison calls, and interviews with people who had never come forward. If you're looking for more about The Jinx, you can also check out The Jinx podcast. Hosted by director Andrew Jarecki and EP Zach Stewart Pontier, the podcast will begin with an episode-by-episode look-back of part one, featuring never-before-heard audio between Durst and Jarecki, along with insights from the series' creators. Then the podcast will cover The Jinx part two as the series releases on Max. Watch the HBO original documentary series The Jinx Part 2 streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Jinx podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, and I'll post the picture of his firearms license, which is from Massachusetts. It is essentially identical. Like when she says that he could have sat and posed for it, that it's not an exaggeration at all.
I'm like, okay, stop it.
Like, right?
Stop it.
It's insane. Now, Bonnie also found, and this is so creepy that we like recently covered a case where something similar happened. Bonnie also found a bag of hair accessories, like clips and barrettes that she was like, these definitely did not belong to Molly. She was like, these belong to a child. Like, and there was like a whole thing of them, a bag of them.
What?
In the home. Yes. And then here's one more thing on Rodney.
I hate this.
His brother Randy owned a white Chrysler, and both of them moved to Florida together pretty shortly after Molly disappeared.
Okay. Hello.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So because we talked about Rodney, we also have to talk about his brother, Randy, the white Chrysler owning brother.
Yeah.
He was actually connected to a missing persons case himself.
Oh, was he?
Do you know about the Holly Purinen case?
That sounds very familiar.
I literally looked up how to say it and I wrote it phonetically. Purinen.
Yeah. That sounds very familiar.
So Holly was a 10-year-old little girl and she went missing from Sturbridge, Massachusetts in 1993. She had been, I believe, vacationing with her grandmother.
Ugh.
And she and her little brother, Zach, took like a short walk to just a neighbor's house. They were checking out like some new puppies that the neighbor had. But somewhere along the way, they got separated and Zach came back without her. And when the adults and everyone went back to look for her, all that was left of her was a shoe by the side of the road.
Oh, my God.
And this little girl must have been like absolutely like super, super smart because she had just gone to a camp and they talked about like what you should do if you're like being abducted or something like that.
Yeah.
And they said like leave something behind. So her family thinks that she like probably kicked off that shoe as to leave behind a sign at 10 years old.
Rip my heart out of my chest.
Yeah. Now, again, this is really horrible. 3 weeks later, Holly's body was found in the woods of Brimfield, Massachusetts, right off of Five Bridge Road.
Oh.
Now.
I've been to Brimfield for the antique fair.
You know who
they
else?
They have, like, a huge antique fair.
You know who else had been to Brimfield? Also, who? That's a great antique fair.
It is, but that just, like, bums me out.
Randy had been in that area.
Oh, I'm shocked.
And actually, he was living in those same woods in a tent where her body was discovered.
Stop it.
Yeah. Coincidence? I think not.
No, this is too much.
Mm-hmm. Now, people who hunted with both brothers later said to the authorities that they were pretty close to Five Bridge Road when they were hunting. Like, and they had like seen it before. The brothers had like pointed it out to them and been like, oh, like there's that over there. Now, Holly's little brother had flashbacks later on of like images of this man that he thought he saw. In 2005, these flashbacks started happening, and he was able to talk to a sketch artist, and the man that he described looked a lot like Randy.
Oh.
And he had never seen Randy before. Like, yeah. He'd never seen a picture of him or anything. And then in 2011, DNA from Holly's crime scene was actually able to connect to a man named David Pouliot, I think is how you say it. And that DNA connected him to the scene. So, like, he was at the crime scene, but he wasn't named a suspect, and he passed away in 2003.
Huh.
Yeah. Now, I didn't look too deep into it because this is mostly about Molly, and maybe we'll cover Holly's disappearance at another point in time, but I'm pretty certain her case is still open, and there was actually somebody's body was exhumed that they thought was, like, in connection with the case.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrific.
So
I can't even.
It's wild.
It's so bad.
The connections between Molly and Holly's case are like very eerie, and that's to say the least. And it's not only the suspects involved, because they were both 10 years old in 1993, the year that Holly went missing. And Molly actually wrote Holly's family a letter because she was so touched by the case.
Stop.
And she told them that she hoped that they would find Holly soon.
Oh my God.
So. Literally, like,
this is so strange.
It's like, I don't even know what to say about that. It's so
I don't even
nuts.
Wow.
Yeah. And I do feel like it's worth mentioning that these two girls had similar features, like blonde hair.
They did.
Blue eyes. Their abductions were sort of similar, both having been in like pretty secluded areas where there was not like a quote unquote adult around.
Yep.
Weird.
That is very weird.
Yes. But Rodney and Randy were not the only people of interest. There was another man named as a suspect by another private investigator on Molly's case, and this was Dan Malley. This man named as a suspect by Dan Malley was Gerald Battisoni. Gerald is a disgusting, like, monster, a pedophile, just the lowest of the low.
Ew.
Yeah, he's horrible. And he had some shocking connections, not only to Molly's case, but Holly's as well, both cases. Now, he was named a suspect by the PI in 2011, when he was already in prison for raping a teenage girl in the 90s.
Disgusting.
Yeah. And the girl who he raped was the daughter of a woman that he had been dating.
Oh.
Yeah. This woman that he raped, this young girl, said that he had sexually assaulted her over 100 times.
Oh my God.
Yes. And it seems that he was like quite literally obsessed with her. He told her there was like multiple police reports regarding this case. He told her that he loved her in front of the police, who were called when he broke a restraining order just to go see her.
What?
So it's not unlikely to think that Gerald may have been stalking this young girl. And here's what's weird about that. When Molly Bish went missing in 2000, the rape victim was actually living on Commons Pond Road.
Stop. So he could have just been there.
Yeah.
Doing what he was doing.
Yep.
And happened to find.
And happened to find Molly. And like, let, I mean, I don't even want to.
And also, go there. I just looked up a photo of him.
He looks like the,
those eyes.
Yeah.
Those eyes.
Right. No.
Those right? eyes. That's but, the same fucking eyes from that.
But the
sketch.
Scariest thing is, I mean, Rodney looks like him too. Like it's.
But I'm gonna be honest.
Gerald looks a little more
like him. Those eyes.
I agree with you.
Those are very specific in that sketch.
Yeah,
he and looks like that guy.
He absolutely does.
Slap a mustache on him, and he's him.
Well, he has a mustache. Just
well, in
wait.
The photo. Oh, in the photo. Well, in the photo I saw, he didn't. But
yeah, there's a reason for that.
Get so, the fuck! I can't. This case is stressing me out.
Yeah. So I said he also had connections to Holly's case. The woman that he'd been dating, the victim's mother, was a real estate agent who had a home listed right near Holly's grandmother's house. And like the woman, the mother of the victim, her name and picture and everything was on that sign. So I don't know if it was like some kind of like revenge, like doing it in an area where the mother was because he was upset with her. I don't know. But weird that those two cases are connected to that man as well.
Very strange.
Yes.
Very strange.
And also, the day that Molly went missing, Gerald was working on his wife at the time, her car, which was a white sedan.
Okay.
And
I mean, come on.
He told her that he took it for a spin out in Warren, where Molly went missing. Yeah. And his wife said that was weird because he didn't have a license at the time. And that once the news of Molly's disappearance broke, he shaved his mustache and stopped going places, like stayed at home most of the time.
I truly, when I looked at that photo of Gerald, I was like, that's the guy.
Oh, his, just
those
wait.
Eyes.
Yeah, those beady little fucking eyes.
Specific. They are so specific in both of those sketches. That is him.
Yeah, it's compelling. Now,
but then it's like Rodney was very compelling too.
I know. A lot of it's very compelling. It's
those eyes, man. I can't get past
the
them.
The eyes don't lie.
They don't.
The windows to the soul.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, Gerald also loved, he liked true crime. He loved to watch court TV and he would talk about true crime a lot. He'd talk about the cases. He would watch some cases over and over again.
Hate that.
He also would apparently like cut out like brutal newspaper clippings and just leave them around the house.
Fun.
And be like, this is how I'm gonna kill you, like to his wife.
So quirky.
Yeah, super quirky. Super quirky. But for some reason, when his wife brought up the Molly Bish case to him, he didn't want to talk about it at all. And he told her, quote, sometimes there's just no evidence. Yeah.
I literally, come on.
Mm-hmm. And by come the on. Way, Gerald had been known, and it is cited in police reports, he had been known to impersonate a police officer. So, like we said, like the first aid kit was open. Sure, yep. Maybe that meant something. Maybe it didn't. Or, I mean, maybe she thought she was helping a police officer.
Yeah, 100%.
So, maybe that's how he got Molly to trust him and he lured her away when she tried to help him.
Gerald looks good for this, man.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know if he was a smoker?
I don't know.
I was going to say it's probably not.
Like No. That's a lie. I do know, actually. Sorry. His wife, because I didn't find this anywhere. I saw it in one article, so I'm not sure if this is the absolute truth. But I guess Maggie, like, made it a point to, when she was doing the composite sketch, to, like, say how the guy was holding the cigarette, or, like, he's holding it a certain way in the picture.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was, like, any specific way. Like, I feel like that's how most people hold it. But his wife said that there was, like, a certain way that he would hold his cigarette, and she said it used to, like, piss her off.
Really?
And she noticed that the man in the sketch is, like, holding it similarly, or Maggie had said that he was.
Because
so
you know
he
what?
Was a smoker.
He's holding it between his two fingers, like, very, like, but his fingers are very, like, rigid.
Yeah, like pointed up.
Like, almost like somebody would be, like, parodying someone, like, smoking, like, moo, you know, like, I'm smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
It just looks like you would be making fun of someone smoking a cigarette. Like,
yeah.
I'm so cool. Because most people, like, hold
it's
the
a little sideways sometimes.
Or they'll maybe hold it, like, between their fingers, just, like, very casually. But this, he looks very rigid,
like,
with
to
his
a point.
Two fingers.
It
is a very specific way to hold your cigarette.
So, I mean, there you have it.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
Gerald. So there's that. And then it is also said that he used to buy drugs in Whiskey Hill, where Molly's remains were found. So he knew that area well, too.
Ugh.
And then the smoking gun, Elena. This is really going to send you all
what
the way
is it?
Home. He attempted suicide when news broke that he was probably connected to Molly and Holly's case. He tried to slit his own throat, but it didn't work. He was taken to a hospital and treated.
He did it.
However,
I feel like he did it.
He died in prison in 2014 without confessing
Damn
to
it.
Having a part in either case.
Damn it.
But he is a pretty strong suspect.
He to me,
yeah,
feels like rock solid.
He feels pretty solid.
And it's killing me that he's, oh, that kills me. That kills me.
I know.
I remember hearing like bits and pieces of him.
Yeah.
But I don't remember like following this like as closely as I thought I would have, but I didn't. And
see,
now I'm like, what?
The thing is, like, obviously, I think in like Rodney and Randy's cases, like there's very like creepy stuff. And like, honestly, there's more creepy stuff about Randy in regards to Holly's case than
for
there
sure.
is Rodney in regards to Molly's case.
Yeah, for sure.
But the thing about Gerald is that there's like a lot of weird shit. Like, first of all, like, why would you try to commit suicide if you had nothing to do
exactly.
with it? Why would you shave your mustache when you, like, obviously that composite sketch went out pretty quickly.
You put a mustache on that dude, it is an exact.
And he had a mustache.
Exact.
He literally shaved it.
Exact.
And like, just all the connections to
that he was working on the white Chrysler
yep.
that wasn't even his that day, and that he took it for a spin in fucking Warren.
Mm-hmm. And that he's like connected to it because he already is in prison for raping a girl.
He smokes, and he smokes weird. And mm-hmm. that Molly's mom was saying like it was a very specific way he held a cigarette.
Right. Which again, I'm not sure if she said that, but
still,
I did see it in one
way,
source.
It's like, there's so many things on top of. So many things.
And the
like,
fact that the woman or the young girl that he raped was living on the same road as the
exactly.
pond.
Exactly. And that he was like stalking, like obsessed with that girl.
It seemed like he was, yeah.
It seems like if you're around the area,
yeah,
you happen to come around Molly.
And you're probably like angry and annoyed.
Yeah, he's probably angry.
He's a predator and a disgusting.
Exactly. He's a monster.
Yeah. Go and read more about him because there's
more.
I got to. Is just, he like used to make his wife wear like children's underwear.
Oh my God. Get the I can't.
When I said he's a disgusting monster, I didn't want to like say
I
that.
I hope he is like,
but oh,
where,
rotting.
Whatever is happening,
rotting.
Wherever he is, I hope it is like nothing we can imagine.
No. Is it Stanzi on TikTok who does,
yes.
like she like pretends to be the
yes.
devil in hell? I hope that she is like his hell, his version of hell.
I love Stanzi.
She's the best.
She really is. I think, isn't it Stanzi Potenza?
I think so.
It is. I think that's what it is on TikTok. She's
yeah.
hilarious. Go follow her
yeah.
if you haven't.
Side note. She is great. But so yeah, back to this. Now, in 2013, construction started close by to where Molly's remains were found. And the construction was for a racetrack in the area that was going to be used for like, quote, driver education, motor vehicle testing, demonstration, and competition. So
okay.
just a bunch of shit. And the Bish family was actually hopeful that some evidence might be discovered during the construction.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Maggie,
they're going to be digging around everywhere.
Right, exactly. And it's a huge area.
Yeah.
And it's right where her remains were found. It's like right there. And Maggie said, quote, I'm so happy that it was like dealt with properly. She said, they were very, very conscientious and took it very seriously about what they could come across.
Good.
They also said that they'd be very happy and very willing to put up a memorial for Molly.
Oh,
and
I
there,
love that.
Okay, so there is a memorial for Molly. It's like this big yellow sign. I don't know if it's like by her house or if it's the memorial that these people put up. I tried to find to figure out where exactly it is, but I can only see a picture of it, like not where it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hmm. We'll have to find out.
Yeah.
But I was happy that they like
that they
were
took it so seriously.
Exactly. Now, it's unclear if any evidence was found there. Like, I didn't find any follow-up of any evidence being found when they built the track, but I felt like it was worth mentioning.
Yeah, for sure. And now, if they did find things, maybe they aren't saying it.
And I'm going to get into, like, a little bit of that
now.
You
never know.
Because a year later, in 2014, some new evidence was found. A partially buried bag was found across the street from where Molly's remains were discovered. And the bag contained plaid boxer shorts that were similar to the ones that Molly had been wearing over her bathing suit.
Oh, okay.
That day she was wearing just little shorts and a pink tank top.
Okay.
So this bag that was found had shorts that were similar to the ones that she was wearing. Now, that again, I haven't found any updated information regarding that discovery, like if it led anywhere else, but it seems like there's been a few discoveries in recent years that the investigators are holding close to the chest, like you would say.
Yeah.
So,
it makes sense.
Yeah, I couldn't find...
You don't want to let everything out because...
No, and it does seem like they're kind of getting somewhere.
It did, yeah. From what I could see, it looks like there seems like there's something, maybe something.
But I mean,
there.
It's been 20 years, so they probably have to go over everything over and over again.
Oh, for sure.
Now, some more pretty big news broke during a 2014 campaign that Molly's family put together. It's called the Just One Piece campaign. Just One Piece campaign. Now, the name comes from the hope that people will realize that just one more piece of evidence could solve this entire case or help the investigation. And it serves as a reminder that no information in this case is too small.
Yeah.
If you know even just an inkling of something, call and say it.
Yeah, for sure.
If you really know it to be true. But so they put together this campaign and people can come forward to make confidential statements during this that may help the investigation.
Awesome.
So in 2014, they had this, and four people came forward to identify a new person of interest.
Oh, God.
Apparently, there was a man staying at a campground nearby, and he was gone one whole entire day. And it was the day that Molly went missing. And he came back the next day, and his face was all messed up. There was scratches, and his face was bloody. And he was yelling about, quote, something bad that happened in the woods the night before.
What?
Yes. And then apparently, again, he's not named, but in recent years, he has allegedly been bragging to people that he knows he's a person of interest, and they still haven't come around to interview him.
What?
Yeah. So strange. Now, his name, like I said, still hasn't been released, but that does make me slightly hopeful that they might be onto something here.
Yeah, if they're not releasing his name, that's interesting.
That's pretty big, I think.
That's interesting.
Now, another piece of information that came out during the same campaign, the Just One More Piece campaign, was about a white car that may be buried at Old Sawmill Campground in West Brookfield. I'm not sure if it's the same campground that the unidentified man was staying at.
I
couldn't determine that.
Yeah.
The property isn't a campground anymore, and it's owned by a different person than it was at the time of Molly's death. Now, the new owner gave permission for the property to be searched, and ground-penetrating radar was used to search the ground for a car that is supposedly buried beneath the campground.
Oh, my God.
And, quote, compelling anomalies were found during the search.
Stop.
Yes. Now, I haven't seen any update about this since 2018, the search for the car. I don't know if they found the car. I don't know anything, because... mama, I was Trixie Mattel, mama, I was looking for this and looking and looking. I spent an hour just trying to find out any update on the car situation.
I am dying. I need
haven't
to know.
Found one. I haven't found one. But again, it gives me hope that maybe they did find something and they are just not saying it right now.
Or they're really they're trying to make sure they do everything right because they do know that things are connecting. I hope.
So they went out there one day and they said that they found some stuff, and then they came back a couple days later and looked around some more. Now, an unnamed man who looks a lot like the composite sketch actually still lives in the same area, which he could be the man that people are coming forward about. He's a known fisher and hunter, and he was friends with the original owner of that campground. And Heather Bish, Molly's sister, said that at the time of Molly's murder, there was construction equipment at the campground that could have been used to aid in burying that car.
Oh, because I was going to... That was
how
one
you
of the
bury
things
a
I
fucking
was like,
car.
I was like, damn, that's a lot of work to bury a car.
But then if you're friends with the guy that works there and there's already
equipment, you can just dig a giant hole, stick the car in there.
Boom. Boom, put it in neutral, you're good to go. Oh my God, I gotta know.
Now, Heather Bish seems to be the one who is really taking things over for the family right now. John Sr. had a stroke. They're definitely, they're not like old at all, but they're older now. And I mean, they've been through a lot in their life. So
for sure.
I think Heather is like really like Go almost Heather. Like the spokesperson and like really like keeping this alive. But everybody in the family has done, like, I'm going to get into it in a second, but Heather said that she will fight until her dying day to find out who this person was and what happened to her sister.
Oh my God, I want to like help her.
I do
like,
too.
This is making me crazy.
I'll let you onto something at the end of this. So Molly's memory is kept alive in some really beautiful ways. The entire family, like I just said, I'm going to get into it now. They have done the most incredible work. They've provided thousands of families from Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New York with like thousands and thousands of identification kits for their children. You know how like when a kid is little you like fingerprint them, I don't even know what goes into it, but the reason that they did this is because they didn't really have, they had like prom pictures and stuff of Molly.
Yeah, it just wasn't a thing back then,
but it wasn't exactly what she looked like, so they had trouble finding a recent picture of her.
Yeah,
so they helped other families so that like God forbid they were ever in the circumstance, they would have
all the things they need to be like, here's all of the things you will need to find them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is like so
amazing.
So like scary when you think about it, but it's something that needs to be done, unfortunately.
Which is horrific that it needs to be done.
Right. They also set up the Molly Bish Foundation, and they have traveled for years to different events all about protecting children against crimes like these. They helped bring the Amber Alert to Massachusetts.
Amazing.
They worked on like countless different legislations that are like all about protecting children, all about like crimes regarding children, abductions. And they also set up another foundation, the Molly Bish Center for the Protection of the Children and the Elderly.
Oh my God.
So they have just like essentially dedicated their lives to getting just not only getting justice for Molly, but like preventing this from ever happening to another family.
Well, and to take that kind of tragedy and that kind of grief
and turn it around.
Her like nightmare situation and turn it into something like so positive and so like to reach out to other families and like that's just like,
because literally like your world just implodes on you, like
no one would
blame anybody in that family for just like going to bed and like never like being the same hermits. Ever again
never wanting to talk to another person ever again. I would not blame one soul of them,
but then they turn around.
See, this is like, wow.
They dedicated their entire lives to this.
Unreal.
And Heather has gone on like different like podcasts. She's like talked to different news outlets and everything. Like Heather really wants to get this case solved for her sister and for her family.
I want this for her so badly.
I want it for her so badly.
Oh.
So this past year on June 27th, for the 20th anniversary of Molly's disappearance, Heather asked that neighbors and people along the drive to Coman's Pond leave their porch light on or a candle in the window. And also that people leave a kindness rock at the sign near the Bish house, which when I read that, I was like, is that the sign? Like the yellow one?
Maybe.
But leave a kindness rock there, she asked them to do it, so that Maggie can use them in her garden.
I want to bring a kindness rock.
Like, dude, I literally, in my mind, I was like, I want to drive there right now.
I want to go and leave a kindness rock.
I know. She drove her parents to the pond that day to remember Molly, as they always do on June 27th.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, District Attorney Joseph D. Early Jr. recently said, quote, the Molly Bish case is turning 20 years old, now 21, but the tips still come in every week and every tip is followed up on. We have had many items tested for DNA over the years and we continue to do so. This case is very active and a tremendous amount of work is being done. I am hopeful it will be solved.
Oh.
And investigators ask that people come forward and share their DNA, especially now that familial DNA is becoming really helpful in cold cases.
Yeah.
Like, they're really asking for people to do that. Now, this is so important. If you're listening to anything, listen to this. Anyone with information about the Molly Bish case can call the state police tip line at 508-453-7575. Again, 508-453-7575.
Amazing.
And Heather Bish said, just to end this, quote, if the person who did this could have a change of heart and tell us what happened, it would give us a certain amount of peace and closure just as far as justice is concerned.
Oh.
So that is the really, really, really tragic case of Molly Bish.
You did such a good job
with
that. And also this case Wow.
I really hope that we can like deliver some kind of update. Like,
I hope so.
As soon as possible.
I swear. I wish I like want to help.
I know.
Somehow. I do like, too. I just want to help. It's one of those cases you always feel so helpless in these. That, like this particular case just.
I think.
Resonates.
Yeah. The fact that it's a Massachusetts case. The fact that it's like just the fact that it happened so quickly. It was clearly like somewhat planned.
Yeah. It just. Yeah, it's definitely, I know it definitely part of it is like Massachusetts family. You just feel like you're just like, I just want to help you.
When like watching interviews with this family, like I watched so many interviews and just like different, like reading different things that they said. They're just like your typical family. Like they're like your friend, like your best friend's family or like, they're just very relatable people.
I just want to give them what they deserve.
Yeah.
I want to give them some kind of closure and some kind of peace. I really do.
Well, if you go to the Molly Bish Foundation website, they have different ways like where you can help. Like if you want to get involved in this, that's the perfect place for you to go. They have different resources where you can.
Because sometimes you just feel like so helpless listening to a story like this. Like I have on like on different things and I'm like, I want to do something, but I feel like I can't. So go there and
figure out how to help.
At least try.
Yeah. And it's seriously, if you know something, call that number that I said. Only if you know something like for real.
Yes, please.
But like they said, like no matter how little you think it is, it could be make or break. You never know.
Yeah, because it could connect to something else that you don't that even you don't know exists. So if you know anything, if you heard anything, if you saw anything.
Jog your memory.
Yeah. Just think about it. Think about it, massholes.
Come on, massholes. We're good at this stuff.
We are.
But yeah. Wow. So that is that.
Thank you for that. And thank you, Patronuses, for choosing that case. Because that was one we always intended to cover. But you guys just sped it up. So thank you for finally getting us to do it.
Moving that to the top of our list.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So guys, we hope you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep
it
weird. Just not so weird that you do anything like this to anybody, because that's horrific. Bye.
That's terrible.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hey, Morbid, this is Weirdos.
Since Elena betrayed me and didn't go through with our brilliant plan for opening episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, we thought that we'd get it right with this go-round, as we tell you about one of our favorite deep dives that you might have missed within our feed.
In August 1963, Patricia Tolles returned home from work to find her apartment demolished. Shaken, she contacted one of her roommate's fathers, who stumbled across a truly grisly murder scene.
The media created a narrative that would, to their benefit, sell newspapers.
Every headline set out to make single women feel afraid and deter them from pursuing personal independence, instead of focusing on how people are depraved and that we should stop assholes from being assholes. You can find this episode by following Morbid and scrolling back a little bit to episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, or by searching Morbid Career Girls wherever you listen to podcasts.